Teaching's one of those professions where I think ultimately it's too hard not to be authentic.
What is your favorite meeting for worship gone wrong story? Do you think that there is any real difference between Friends and the other private schools in the area?
That you have a short time in life to be young and a really long time to be old. Somebody got in with some rap that was pretty choice, and it was pretty obscene. I broke the clipboard saying, we really don't need this.
Welcome back to another episode of the Quaker Matters podcast. I am Andres, class of 2021. We have Eli running the behind the scenes, also class of 2021. And today we're gifted to have a wonderful conversation with the legendary mystic Jay Grashkin. He worked at this school for 22 years. He was a lacrosse coach of the year for 3 different years. And he is the greatest musical talent to come out of this school. Jake, how we doing? How we doing, Jake?
Well, I know that's not true, but yeah, I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. I was thinking we could start this with some softballs.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying, to get us going?
Yeah.
So over the years, how do you think, during your time at Friends, the education system, I guess, that you've been quote-unquote in has changed or evolved up until now when, you know, this is your last year?
Well, I think Friends continues to seek to improve at all times. So I think try to be responsive to the needs of students. I think being able to integrate technology, which I think is a real challenge because it's not just about integrating technology, but it's about, you know, accepting that we live in a world where everybody is online at all times. I think
Right. It's
been sort of a challenge. But I think the big part of the evolution that hasn't changed and has helped keep them at the forefront of education is keeping the students at the center of that experience and, giving them hands-on opportunities to learn, to work together, collaborate. And it's not just a teacher standing at the front of the room lecturing and filling the kids in with information. It's more getting them to engage and think critically about problems and things that they're going to face in the future.
Right. And you think that Friends does a good job of doing that, of like preparing kids for the future in that sense? Like they have more hands-on experience than you maybe would have.
I think about as well as they can, considering what I would say, which is a lot of us, you know, don't know what the future is going to hold.
Right. Yeah. I mean, speaking of that, I guess I was just thinking, did AI affect your job at all?
I didn't have it affect my job too much. But I will say that the idea of trying to figure out how to best integrate that into education is something I'm happy to say I won't be a part of.
Right.
I think it's difficult. I think there's ways in which it can be used as a tool to generate ideas and things like that, but I think it can also be a crutch.
Right.
Where if you're trying to get kids to generate ideas, to get words on a page that are coming authentically from them, and they can just plug something into ChatGPT and
right.
get something, I think the tendency is going to be, you know, to try and do that in some instances where kids feel like they can get away with it. And the truth
right.
is, I don't think it's as easy to catch as, you know, something stolen from another site.
Mm.
I mean, I think there are ways. I think Turnitin.com and some others have some methods, and they're trying to work at that. But I think AI is faster, maybe a little faster than even those mechanisms for catching it. So it's
that's the insane thing. You have AI working on both sides. They're playing for both teams. Like, let's make it better, more non-detectable. Then you have the other side, which is like, let's make it able to detect.
Right.
And so I think you're tapping out at a good time in that sense. Something else that I feel like I'm very curious about, because obviously I'm close with Nate. Eli's close with Nate. I'm also the son of a teacher, so that's kind of a unique niche. I received, as a little anecdotal story here, I received probably 5 detentions in my middle school career. 4 of them were from my mother, so I know a lot about this kind of dynamic. What was it like teaching at a school where your kids attended? And did any funny things come about with that? Was that challenging? Did you have to navigate that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I didn't teach Nate in the classroom, which probably was a good thing. And I did teach Lily for one semester. I was on sabbatical in 2020 in the fall.
Right.
So I taught her when I came back. And, you know, in truth, she's a strong student, and she did what she was supposed to do. So we never really had any incidences. And with Nate, I think the coaching, it's funny, Nate was on the sideline for so long.
Right.
Even at a young age, I always tell the story, but he would come up to me and say, like, Chad looks tired. You got to take him out. And I'd just be like, Nate, please give me my space, you know, and then I'd be looking going, Chad looks tired. We got to take him out.
Wow.
So he really had a sense of that. But then it was different as a player. And I remember a couple times, I think he probably felt like I was holding him to a higher standard. And I think that might be true. I think maybe a high standard, the idea if he's not, you know, if he, you know, doesn't make a hustle play that he needs to make, it's like, everybody sees it. You're right. Coming out, dude. I'm sorry. And so that might be a little unfair, but it was, I did not want to be one of those coaches or teachers who was seen as somebody who was sort of favoring my child. I didn't think that did them any service and didn't do anybody else any either.
Do you think you were harder on Nate for that?
Yeah.
Because I feel like I definitely experienced that with
him. Yes, I think I was. And, you know, I feel a little bad about that, but I think in truth it's better than the alternative, which is to have a parent who it's like, well, of course he's going in. He's the coach's son.
Right.
Of course he got the A. He's the, you know.
Right.
And I'm sure somebody along the way had that perception, but it was not the reality.
I think I can attest to this. I feel like Eli, you can as well. But you had like a, out of a lot of the teachers that we had, there's probably a couple in this category that it also felt like you were not necessarily one of us, but it's kind of like you didn't care as much about the having some sort of crazy dynamic within the classroom. Like we could joke around and have a good time, at least with me, because I was in your advisory, same with Eli. And so I asked some people about how would they describe you as a teacher. And so to quote one of the brightest minds to ever step foot on this campus, and I'll get to who that is in a second. Quote, no cap, Jake was one of the realest teachers at Friends for real. It didn't seem like he was trying to keep up the student-teacher dynamic. Homie was just vibing, end quote. That was Mark Wilson. And that is what he said about you. And I, despite the humor in that, I do think that's a very good point. Is that something you ever thought about, that dynamic between, like, because I feel you're a very approachable teacher. I think there are certain people that maybe weren't like that when I was going to school here, but with you, it was very easy to just talk about things and you were opinionated and you weren't afraid in like a culture right now where you kind of got to be walking on eggshells, I feel like, in this kind of situation where you don't want to say the wrong thing. You kind of felt like you were very approachable with things. Did you ever think about this dynamic? Was that ever on your mind, or were you just...
I wanted to vibe.
Were you vibing?
I mean, I thought about, you know, I think that teaching's one of those professions where I think ultimately it's too hard not to be authentic. I mean that for me, I found like the easiest person to be up there was myself. When I first started teaching, I think there was this sense of, especially as a very young person, I started at 22, like right out of college. I felt like I had to be perfect. You know, everything had to be right. I couldn't say, I don't know, you know, and as opposed to, you know, by the time I was, you know, at the end of my career, I was saying to kids, I don't know, look it up, you know, like just like so that, because I think that in some ways it's relieving to the kids to think, well, this teacher doesn't know everything and teachers don't know everything. And when you try to pretend or try to be something you're not, I think kids have a pretty good BS detector. And I think that I tried not to be one of those teachers who was shoveling a lot of BS.
So I think you did a good job with that. On that note, do you think that there is a single most rewarding part of this job, particularly at Friends, that you noticed or that you, now looking back, feel like, man, this was probably the most rewarding part of my job?
Well, there's so many. And I think that in truth, I mean, even just, you know, today being able to come in here and see you guys, and it's like, I think it's a job where you have a connection with people for a lot longer than the year you teach them or the couple years you coach them. And I think that as I've let people know I'm, you know, I won't be teaching next year and coaching next year. I think it's been an opportunity for me to connect with people who reached out, you know, come out of the woodwork to thank me or to say that, you know, they wanted to connect more. And I think that so those relationships are really the heart of what it's really all about.
That's the most rewarding part.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I don't know. I've always thought about what it's like to be in a position where you're constantly, like, for us, it's like we're in such a big transition. Like, I don't know how to describe this, but what is it like having a job where you're constantly working with people who are in a grand transition in their lives? Like, you're seeing, like, you're with me right now. We're speaking sort of like adults, right? But you also remember when I was just a little kid just messing around, being an idiot. And now we're here, and it's only really been, 8 years?
Yeah.
Is there any unique part of that sticks out to you?
I mean, I think it's one of the things about the job that makes it require so much sort of patience, and I think humor is a huge thing. I think if you can have a sense of humor about it, to put yourself back in the position of being 14 or 15,
right,
thinking, well, you know, I always loved it when, as a coach, someone would make a mistake, and someone would go, what was he thinking? And I'm like, you don't think I have any better sense of that than you, right? That he's 14 years old and he's like an impulsive moment and did something that he will learn from and regret. Now, of course, it can still be frustrating at the time. So I think, it is an interesting dynamic. Every year, people move up and move on. I always joke that you have a short time in life to be young and a really long time to be old because, you know, for most people, their lives don't change that much. I mean, people change careers and things like that from time to time. But, I was going from 10th grade to 10th grade. You know, I would go from 12th grade to 12th grade. I was teaching, the same classes, just different groups of kids. And they were in the transition period. And in some ways, seeing me as a bit of a means to an end. You know, I'll admit that.
Means to an end. That's hilarious. Yeah, also, now that I have this opportunity, I think, and we can transition a little bit to maybe a little bit more funny questions, but what is your favorite Meeting for Worship Gone Wrong story?
Well, I think it really has to be Meeting for Worship Gone Wrong. It's probably got to be the one that I wasn't even there for because I was on sabbatical, but they did it online. And somebody got in with some rap that was pretty choice, and it was pretty obscene. And I say my favorite. Because I wasn't there and didn't have to deal with it, it made it a lot easier. But I remember seeing some of the teachers' faces and, you know, what was being said and everything, and just thinking, someone's got to get this off. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know how they got it off. But it reminded me of something that I thought about many times, which is it's such a privilege for the kids and such a leap of faith for the adults to allow a child to stand up
and say whatever
to mind. I think that there were some years where there were some kids who would like get up multiple times and, you know, kind of, it starts as that kindergarten, like, I love this school kind of thing. And everybody wants to share. And then of course by high school, nobody wants to share.
Right.
I thought that was, it was the most memorable. Let's put it that way. I don't know if I would call it my favorite.
Okay. And you weren't there?
No, I saw it online. I mean, I was...
Gotcha. You were virtually there.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe I saw it after the fact. I don't remember how it worked.
But. Wow. Okay. Virtual Meeting for Worship. That sounds like a recipe. Like, just saying that is a recipe.
Yeah, the waiting room and all that. I think this is all this kind of Zoom bombing and everything is something that, you know, of course, once the technology's there, the next step is for somebody to like abuse it, right?
Right.
And then for the powers that be to figure out how to rein it in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
There were people who farted during Meeting for Worship. I mean, that was always...
Eli, this is your time to shine.
Yeah. I remember hearing a few of those, and you just try to ignore it, but everybody laughs.
Right.
And,
was there a fart that specifically resonated with you that stood out over the 22 years you were here?
I can't think of one in particular. I think there were, you know.
It would be more impressive if you were like, yes, 2007, there was this one kid.
Yeah, the one that, like, sent everybody out of the gym.
On that sort of same funky note, what is the weirdest thing you've found left behind in your classroom?
In my classroom? Well,
yes.
A lot of things. A lot of props, like water guns.
Like senior assassin stuff?
Yeah, but usually from like Macbeth scenes or...
Right.
Othello or whatever we were doing. I mean, the one I appreciated the most was the skeleton that's still in the room. Somebody used it for a skit, and I just... They didn't take it, and while a lot of props are easy to get rid of and you want to get rid of them, that was one that I actually kept around.
Skeleton.
And had some fun with.
Yeah. What about the most creative excuse someone gave you for not turning in a piece of homework?
Well, it's funny. I actually had a kid who sort of dared to say that there was a team picnic after practice, and that... and that he just couldn't do the work. Well, meanwhile, I was collecting it from everybody, and other kids on his team had done the work. It was like, it's one thing to just be like, I don't have it. It's another thing to be like, well, I had a school-sanctioned team picnic, and I just couldn't be...
Was this lacrosse, or was it in a different sport?
It was a different sport. Okay. I think it was in the fall season.
Okay. That would be hilarious if it was lacrosse. And
you're... Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. No, that would...
Yeah. On the topic of lacrosse... you are known for, and by the way, I don't know if you know this, your son is currently compiling a video of all the times you've lost your on the sideline.
I bet he is.
And I think that is one of my favorite aspects about having you as a coach, because you keep it real. Like you said, you keep it real. Do you have and I'm not trying to bring up any trauma here. Do you have any specific frustrating moment from all your years coaching lacrosse that you're just like, this was the worst for me? I absolutely
worst. Well, I think that, you know, people saw the frustration, and I try to be better about that over the years with a couple of years ago at Charter, when things were just, nothing was sort of going our way and nobody was listening, and I think I broke the clipboard saying we really don't need this, because nobody's put anything into action. And there was a little bit of infighting, like one of the, you know, somebody was frustrated about their playing time, and it was just one of those days. And there's a picture somewhere of me like down like this, just like, you know, just one of those headaches of a day, you know. But those happen.
I'm just thinking, because Nate showed me this video yesterday, and there's one where you bring your fist in the air, you slam them on the ground, you're just like on the ground.
Yes.
but that's passion. What it is passion. That's why
I lean with the body English and try, you know, you know, if I lean this way or I lean that way, like maybe the ball will go in.
Right. Well, what about the funniest lacrosse moment? I can share mine. I only played lacrosse for 1 year.
Okay.
But Eli, I think, I don't know if you remember this. I think this was JV game.
Braveheart.
He is going against some other kid. They're both not terribly talented at lacrosse. And Eli wins the ball, sprints across the field, open net, hits the behind the back, misses the goal entirely. And then that went on for like 5 minutes. And
it's right into the goalie's stick. I didn't miss.
Oh, that's right. You threw it right. Yeah.
And he ran down.
Yep.
And
he missed.
And then
he got called offside.
That's right. But he ran down, the other guy went up. Yeah. Because somebody's got to be back. You got to have one back.
Yeah. I was only there for a year.
Yeah.
But I feel like lacrosse does have a lot of those moments where just a lot of funny things happen. Do you have one that comes to mind where you're like, this was the funniest thing I've experienced as a coach?
I think there's video of it somewhere, but we were playing over at Tower Hill one time, and we had been on the bad end of that rivalry for a couple years, and this was a year where we were just the better team. And at one point, their fans were getting kind of obnoxious, and they were particularly jawing at River Harper, and River scored another goal, and he got a penalty for being too boisterous about it, which I understood that penalty, and I think you can see from the video that I'm trying to sort of calm him down. But when he goes to the penalty box, he does this incredibly athletic, like, squat down into sitting cross-legged, And the fans are yelling at him, and he is pointing. He's like going like this to them, like, yeah. And he's like pointing to the scoreboard. And of course, while I couldn't enjoy that with him then, I realized how funny that was, and the way the whole...
And this was at Tower Hill?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
yeah, that rivalry out that actually made me think between because I have no idea what started that. I don't know if you know what started this rivalry. Or
just, oh, it's good.
We're right next.
For me.
But
I'll tell you why the schools are such intense rivals because they're so similar.
Do you think they are?
Yeah, in terms of the size, in terms of the.
Do you think the people that?
Oh, I don't. I don't claim to know, but I think they're. I just mean like what makes a rivalry is the has to be the similarities. Like it's hard to have a rivalry with Salesiana and anything
right.
because they're just such
you're
a good school.
Yeah. Do you think that there is any real difference between Friends and the other private schools in the area? And if so, what would that be?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Quaker philosophy at the heart of the school is something from all the way from the beginning to the end that I think is pretty important. And also something I think that when you're in it, you don't necessarily appreciate the idea that like people can come together and sit in silence and that this is like a way of processing things that I think more of the world needs. And I think that that's why I think, you know, Quaker education's been sort of at the cutting edge of education for a long, long time. And I think some of it is naturally progressive because it's coming from the people in it being at the center of it.
Something that I really appreciated about Friends that I wonder how this has changed since we've left is the fact that there was like school supported debates between difference of opinion. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that a lot of kids probably didn't have much of, at least in my generation. And I really appreciated that. However, I would love to hear how that's evolved. I know that even when I was there, it was quite clear that everyone pretty much agreed with one of the points, but it was just a very good exercise to try and argue both sides. Mm-hmm. I guess the question here would be, do you think that Friends School nowadays allows for true diversity of thought?
That's a great question. I do. I mean, I think probably there are some people who feel like this is a very left-leaning place politically. And while I think that might be argued about a lot of educational institutions, mm-hmm. I still think that students here are able to voice their opinions and are, I think like with things like the debate, the attempt to have civil discourse is really the important part of it because it's like we can disagree, but we don't have to be mortal enemies about this disagreement. And I think, I actually believe that for a family that's looking at Friends and feels they're a little more conservative than the ethos here, I feel like that will only help your child in terms of their sort of ability to think critically. Because, you know, part of being a critical thinker is not just accepting at face value everything you're taught and told.
Exactly.
So I think that we do have conservative students. We have students from all sort of stripes, I think, that way.
Right. Yeah, because I feel like I've found, and I wonder if Eli can test this too, that at least at my school, I do feel like I'm surrounded by a bunch of bright people, but it does kind of feel like it is an echo chamber at times of the same. It's just like, yeah, I agree. Oh, yeah, me too, man. I agree. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And it's often when someone comes and proposes a different idea, it's immediately kind of shut out. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that ever did come up here, because I do think that, like I said, Friends School stands out with the fact that they support these debates. I think that was awesome. I remember, I think it was during the Trump, like the first Trump kind of candidacy that we were having debates about it. And I think that is incredible. Like that was so helpful for me as a student at the time to be able to see both sides. But I just feel like, especially being in college now and a left-leaning college, I guess, it's an echo chamber where I feel like universities initially were a spot to debate.
Yeah.
And now it almost feels like that's shunned upon.
Yeah, I think people worry about these sort of landmines, these things they can fall into.
Right.
And I think you're seeing that on college campuses with the debates about Israel and Palestine. And I think it's increasingly important for kids to be able to think critically and also to think beyond just headlines too, to like actually understand that,
right,
you know, it's not just about coming up with your position. It's like making it well researched, like understanding the nuances and the subtleties, which frankly, I worry sometimes that people aren't making the time for. It's like we have all this information at our disposal,
right,
but we're not actually like sinking our teeth into it too much.
Right. I think because you were talking about the Quaker values and how that is what separates Friends School from other schools.
Yeah.
Is there, and of course there are the Spices, and of course I know all about them. Do you think there's a one specific Quaker value that rings true the most from this school and the students as they kind of transition from this school out into the world?
Yeah, I think stewardship to some degree. I think about the students that I've taught, and the vast majority of them are doing something for the greater good. You know, and I think I know it, you know, of course, when you're graduating from school and you're thinking about your career, you got to pay the bills, right? And
right.
there's easier ways to do that than others. But I think of so many of my former students who have who are involved in, you know, something that is socially conscious, something, whether it's being involved in rights for women in the military, or whether it's, I just saw a student recently who just worked on an HBO series that was The Plot Against America, which is a Philip Roth novel, and it's sort of very timely. You know, I think our kids, it's sort of like they understand that they're getting the benefit of a great education here, and the question that follows is kind of, well, and what are you going to do with it?